Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
The WeatherTech Sports Car Championship on IMSA Radio.
A delight to be trackside once again for the start of the 2022 season. We loved our time at Daytona International Raceway and the second part for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. Runners and riders, the teams and drivers of the effective 36 hours of Florida is about to get underway in terms of their track time. Jeremy Shaw is in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre alongside me. And we have managed, Jeremy, to keep hold of a goodly proportion of the teams and drivers from Daytona. And what a quality field we have here, appropriately for the 70th running of the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring presented by Advanced Auto Parts.
Yeah, really impressive field, John. We've got 53 cars, which is 16 more than we had last year. A remarkable jump in entries. And as you say, a lot of really interesting teams opting to stay on here and run Sebring as well. And it's a tremendous entry. All the classes are going to be very, very hotly contested. This is the first round for LMP3 and LMP2 in the overall season championships for those two classes. For everything else, it's the second round, i.e. for DPI, also the two GTD classes, Pro and, non-Pro, so GTD Pro and GTD. It's also the second round for all of the five classes of the Michelin Endurance Cup. That comprises four races in the season, Daytona and Sebring. Later on in the middle of the summer is the Salem 6 Hours of Watkins Glen, and then rounding it out at the end of the year at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta for Petit Le Mans. So that'll be the four rounds of the Michelin Endurance Cup. So, you know, lots of things at stake this weekend.
As you can probably hear in the background, me in the background for a moment there, we have got cars out on the track for this first session. And the session is an hour and a half. And with a bit of luck, we'll be able to say hello to Shea Adam and Joe Bradley in our pit lane. Let's check in with Shea first of all this morning.
Good morning, John.
Morning, Shea.
It is lovely down here. I actually just walked all the way to pit out to try and see how tight the exit is going to be for the Allegro Motorsports crew, because they are the last pit box on the lane and they still have to make it through the Michelin RFID readers. The answer is it's not going to be an issue. They have plenty of room to try and make it to the pit out. But I ran into Michael DeCasada and Daniel Morad. So it is Maxi Goat starting the session. Those two boys were saying, we're all the way down here, so you got to remember where you don't want to be. It's a walk of shame. They DNF'd at the 24 Hours of Daytona, looking for a much stronger finish here at Sebring, but it is still a very, very busy pit lane, and a lot of people are doing installation laps at this point.
As we would expect. Thank you, Shea. We'll get some interviews with the teams once they've settled into a bit of a groove. No times coming in as yet at IMSA Radio if you want to get in touch with us. And Shea, you're our eyes and ears at the moment because there's no TV pictures up for this session, so anything that happens on the track you'll have to let us know. So Shea, give us a little rundown of any of the changes that we've had, because there was quite a lot. We talked about it in Midweek Motorsport on Wednesday. Quite a lot of driver changes, some livery changes as well for this weekend.
Well, the most important thing, if we start with the DPI category, is that neither Elio Castroneves nor Simon Pagenaud are here to follow up with their race win at the 24 Hours of Daytona. The third driver for the team this week for MSR is Stoffel Vandoorne. He's joining in with the crew. Let me see. Actually, I believe I see Oliver Jarvis. Let me just climb up on the pit stand for Meyer Shank Racing, because they're worth talking to. Hello, Oliver. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Now, the last time you won the 24 Hours of Daytona, you backed it up with the Sebring 12-hour win. How much more difficult is it going to be able to try and get a win here this weekend, though?
I missed part of that, but yeah, 2013 managed to win Daytona and then Sebring. So, you know, it would be a dream to be able to do that again this year. For us to win Daytona was already huge, but if we could back that up with a Sebring win as well, I mean, that would be just be a dream come true.
How have you and Tom been getting on with Stoffel so far?
Yeah, he's all right. I'm actually sat right next to him as I say that. No, he's a great guy. He slotted straight in, did a really good job at the test. And it's great to be able to bring him on board. Short notice for him, but yeah, he'll fit right in.
The Acura doing pretty well around the bumps of Sebring?
We've just gone out. I mean, we had a two-day test here. We were happy with the car. We know from previous races that the Cadillac's particularly strong around Sebring over the bumps. But I think we've got a good car, and hopefully we can take the fight to them.
Well, a little bit of good news for you. Cadillac win this race every other year. They won it last year, so you've got a 50% shot. Good luck this year.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
I do like Shears' progression statistics. I'm not sure it counts for much, but just trying to cheer Ollie Jarvis up there a little bit. We have 20 drivers doing double duty this weekend, so they'll have to manage their time pretty well in the free practice sessions for both IMSA and the WEC. WEC had a couple of practice sessions yesterday, and of course we'll be covering those over on the third practice session and qualifying. We'll be covering over on RS2, over on RS1, the only dedicated free radio service for the WEC season, and one that has been around since the very start. Well, the weather's picked up, Jeremy. 22 degrees Celsius on the track and 22 in the air. And pretty lovely day after the foggy start this morning. Sheer Adam has some news on the 48 Ally Cadillac. Sheer? And so we can't go to Sheer at the moment. I can hear her, but clearly she can't hear me. New TV compound this year, and it's we're still breaking it in, effectively. I think it's fair to say, Jeremy.
Breaking it or breaking it in?
Well, but yes, possibly a little bit of both. So, and I've not got any timing either, Jeremy. Have you got timing?
Yeah, I've just managed to find something here. It's this is the Jim McGuire has actually set about just on two or three laps so far. Jim McGuire is out in the LMP2 car for United Autosports, car number 22. He's set a 152.0 in the very early stages of this session. Second fastest at the moment, Jonathan Bomarito in car number 11 for PR1 Matheson Motorsports. And now Mike Rockenfeller, the first of the DPI cars, goes to the top. Car number 48 turns a 151.8. Quickest LMP3 car right out of the box is Garrett Grist in the Junior 3 Racing, car number 30, ahead of Joao Barbosa for Sean Creech Motorsports in the number 33. It's a couple of Ligiers quickest in LMP3 at the moment. Fastest of the GTD cars, Robbie Foley in the Turner Motorsport BMW, car number 96. Boy, the BMW team's had some struggles in the opening race of the season at Daytona with their brand new M4 GT3. And in terms of the balance of performance coming into this weekend, the BMW has been given quite a bit of a break, got a bit more power, a little bit less weight, and should be a lot more competitive than it was at Daytona. Clearly the BOP for that brand new car, it's awfully difficult to set BOPs for brand new cars at the beginning of a season. I think everybody at BMW accepted that Remake Lanham. So they certainly it was a struggle there, but they expected much more towards the sharp end of the field with that brand new and very exciting M4 GT3 from here on during the season, John.
Yeah, it was diffuser problems, wasn't it? They had trouble keeping that diffuser on the car.
I mean, the bounce performance was not in their favour. I mean, everybody acknowledged that afterwards. So
correct.
That's been the main thing. Just they didn't have quite the straight line speed that they wanted, and various other issues as well. But the car really wasn't competitive at Daytona, really through no fault of anybody's. Just the kind of way the cookie crumbles, basically. And I say it's always difficult to set that performance levels for a brand new car, but here everybody seems pretty confident that the balance should be a lot more equitable between each of the manufacturers. When you've got this many manufacturers running in GTD, it's mighty difficult to ensure that all of them are competitive. But there's been a few tweaks, as I say, to the various classes coming into this weekend.
Good field, as we were talking about earlier on. It's two DPIs up front, Pipo Durrani for Whelan Engineering's Cadillac, and then Mike Rockenfeller back in the IMSA paddock, running for Ally. She was about to give us a bit of news about that car before she disappeared into the ether.
Yeah, the number 48 team is one of several that have had to sort of modify their driver lineups as a result of the fact that the NTT IndyCar Series scheduled their race at Texas, their opening race of their season, sorry, second race of their season, because they were at St. Pete a couple of weeks ago, for Texas. That was announced much later than was the IMSA schedule toward the end of last season, and that has meant that several drivers that would have been part of the event here at Sebring are instead committing themselves to the IndyCar weekend at Texas, and Jimmy Johnson being one of those. Also, two of the drivers in a winning team at Daytona, Elio Castroneves and Simon Pagenaud, also committed instead to Texas, so will not be here at Sebring for the 70th running of the 12 hours. Pipo Durrani is now at the top for Whelan Engineering Racing, car number 31, the Cadillac. 147.737. He just completed his fourth lap at speed. And to put things into perspective a little bit, the qualifying lap record is a 145.3. That was set last year by Pipo Durrani in that same car, number 31 Cadillac. The race lap record was set jointly last year by Felipe Nasr and Rega van der Zende in different Cadillacs. They both turned a 146.151. And since that isn't qualifying, in qualifying, if you set the identical times, it would be whoever set the time first would have the better position on the grid. But during the race, they're both credited with that lap record equally then going into the 22 season, Felipe Nasr and Rega van der Zende, 146.1. So we're still, you know, quite a way away from those marks this early in the session. 147.7, the benchmark at the moment. That will change fairly soon. Robbie Foley remains fastest of the GTD cars, 18th overall for Turner Motorsports. He's just got a bit quicker, a 201.0. The GTD lap record was actually 158.7, but that was set way back in 2018. I think probably a better benchmark would be last year's pole position, which was Jack Hawksworth, a 159.2. The fastest time so far, 2:01.0685, excuse me, for Robbie Foley. Philip Ellis for Wynwood Racing in car number 57, that's the Mercedes, second fastest here. Actually, he's just been eclipsed by the pro car, car number 97, the Proton WeatherTech entry, Mauro Engel from Germany, second fastest of the GTD cars at the moment, and best in GTD Pro. At the front of the field, it's Pipo Durrani, 147.738, just 0.003 behind him at the moment. Goes up into second place, Tristan Vautier, the Frenchman in the number 5 JDC Miller Motorsports Mustang Sampling Cadillac. That is the car that won this race last year. Magnificent comeback win for that number five car. They had all sorts of dramas during the race. They had various incidents that put it back in the pack, but it came back and Sebastian Bourdais drove a brilliant last stint. And despite the fact he had a rear wing failure in the closing stages, which set the handling of that car completely awry, he was able to hold on and take a magnificent victory for that number five team. It's a bit of a struggle for the number five car most of last season, that win aside, but they made tremendous progress at the final round at Petit Le Mans at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta, and then carried that momentum forward into Daytona and had a really strong weekend there as well.
Live from the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre, IMSA, and the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship from Sebring. And it's Jeremy Shaw, John Hindhoff, Shea Adam just standing by in the pit lane. You can probably hear us on the PAs. You can't hear us in our headset at the moment. See if we can get some timing and scoring as well over here. Nope, it's not working either. Let's get an entry list then instead. So, seven DPIs, all the usual suspects, eight LMP2s, United Autosports with Duncan Tapley, Guy Smith and Jim Maguire in the 22 car. Guy Smith will be joining us in the booth over the weekend. We've got some great guests for you for our various coverage. So Josh Pearson, I see, in the PR1 Matheson Motorsport LMP2. LMP3s, 10 thereof. And 11 GT Daytona Pros, holding up very well from the Daytona entry. 17 GTDs. Paul Miller Racing, of course, back in the paddock, having recently had the delivery of their BMW M4 GT3. And it's Erik Johansson with Madison Snow and Brian Sellers this weekend.
Yeah, and Erik Johansson, we saw him last season. He made his North American debut, one of the BMW young drivers, junior drivers, has some help from Sweden. He raced last season in the Porsche Carrera Cup North America, at least a partial season, and had a good run here at Sebring. He finished eighth in race two, so he has some experience of this racetrack, and he has experience of having driven the GT3 BMW in Europe, and a talented young man who I think will be a good addition to that team. They've done a little bit of testing. The car was delivered shortly after Daytona. It wasn't ready for the first round of the season, but they've done I think a little bit of testing, and they're coming into this weekend, you know, as well prepared as they can possibly be with what is still a brand new car. Red flag is out on this session. Car number 38 stopped on course at turn 7. That is the Performance Tech Motorsports LMP3 car. Rasmus Lind shown at the wheel at the moment. He's fourth fastest in the class. I think he's really set a completely representative time in the early part of the session. He's a couple of seconds down on Colin Brown, who's fastest in LMP3 with a 156.9. But Rasmus Lind has now continued our... message shows on the scoring system, so he's continued. Hopefully that'll be enable the red flag to be withdrawn fairly quickly.
Yeah, remember teams, don't go back go back to your box, rather do not sit in the fast lane of the red flag, otherwise you'll get a drive through. One of Shea's pet peeves.
Yeah, we don't have any pictures at the moment, so we can't tell you whether what is happening out on the racetrack.
No, this session not being covered. What I might be able to do with a bit of clever jigging and porking, Jeremy, if you stand by for a moment, if I could get anything to work today.
Meanwhile, as we're having the reset, though, the car's still making their way back to the pit lane. It's overall, Pippo Durrani still fastest. And in car number 31, the Wheel and Engineering Action Express Racing Cadillac, 147.738, just 0.003 of a second quicker than Tristan Vautier in number 5, JDC Miller Motorsports Mustang Sampling Cadillac. The best of the Acuras, Philip Albuquerque, car number 10 for Konica Minolta Racing, is third place, just a tenth away from the fastest time. Mike Rockefeller in front, number 48, the Ally Cadillac in fourth position. Rounding out the top five is the Daytona winner, Tom Blomqvist, in the Acura car number 60 for Meyer Shank Racing. LMP2, Louis Delatraz in car number 8 has set the fastest time early. That's Tower Motorsports entry at 1 minute 49.4. Just a tenth of a second quicker than Juan Pablo Montoya, making his seasonal debut, driving for the Dragon Speed USA team, car number 81. That is going to be very interested to see how that car performs. Juan Pablo driving with his 16-year-old son, Sebastian, who's been racing in Europe in Formula 4 cars for the last season and a bit. Third fastest in LMP2, Carl Tilley for Era Motorsport, car number 18. In LMP3, Colin Brown for the Core Autosport, car number 54, fastest ahead of Felipe Fraga, the winner at Daytona, car number 74 for Riley Motorsports. Third position, car number 33 for Sean Creech Motorsports, Joao Barbosa. GTD Pro, Nick Yellerly in the BMW, car number 24, one of the two BMW Team RLL factory-backed cars in GTD Pro, fastest at the moment from Daniel Serra, in the number 62 Rizzi Competizione Ferrari, car finished second place at Daytona. Third position in GTD Pro, Mauro Engel in the car number 97, the Proton Racing WeatherTech racing entry, car number 97, the Mercedes. In GTD, also a Mercedes, Philip Ellis for Wynwood Racing, car number 57, a 2 minutes 0.9. ahead of Robbie Foley in the Turner Motorsport BMW, car number 96, and Brian Sellers in the BMW car number 1 for Paul Miller Racing. Green flag is back out again, so our cars are underway, and John has worked his magic. We do have, well, lots of pictures actually. We've got a checkerboard screen.
Ta-da!
Yeah, brilliant job, John. Too many things to look at now.
There's no pleasing you, Sean.
Oh, yes, there is. This is brilliant.
Even the TV control didn't want to work today. It's been one of those days.
And you talked about earlier on, there was a fair bit of fog first thing this morning, but that has all burned off now, and bright blue sky, and the temperature is rising quite quickly. What's the temperature showing at right now? Can you see?
22 Celsius on the track, 23 in the air. It's just gradually going up. There's still a little bit of overcast, but it's, as you say, it's rapidly disappearing. And I think we'll see some pretty decent times. We've got free practice 3 and qualifying today for the FIA World Endurance Championship. We'll cover that over on RS1.
Yes, and qualifying for WeatherTech is tomorrow, isn't it?
Correct, yeah. And very warm at the weekend. Race day on Friday for WEC and Saturday, of course, for IMSA. And actually, race day today. We have races today because we've already had one Porsche race. We've got another, and we've got the Alan Gear 120 for the Michelin Pilot Challenge. So a bumper race weekend in terms of the series, and a lot of people taking advantage of it. Big crowd.
Yeah, it's not called Super Sebring for nothing, is it? This is proper spring break weather. Absolutely fantastic. So Tristan Nunez has taken the wheel of number 31 car from Pipo Durrani, who set the fastest time early in the session. Tristan's, the WeatherTech drivers, at least, fairly relaxing tomorrow. There's a practice session in the morning and then qualifying, but then the WEC race will take place later in the day. But Tristan Nunez is going to be busy in a different way tomorrow evening. He's going to be part of a concert in the fan appreciation zone, I think at 7:30 tomorrow evening. His band, Acceleration, which is he and his father Juan, who plays bass guitar. Tristan himself is a vocalist and plays the lead guitar as well, or rhythm guitar. No pressure there. He was telling me yesterday he's really looking forward to that gig. Acceleration is the gig at 7:30 tomorrow evening. He will be playing out on the fan appreciation zone.
Oh, cool! Very good.
Yeah, I'm trying to pose for that.
should have brought me guitar.
Racing and music at the same time.
Brilliant.
New fastest time then overall. Earl Bamba goes to the top in the 0-2 car for Cadillac Racing, the Chip Ganassi run entries. That's the Cadillac accessories identification on that 0-2 car. Earl Bamba 147.546, so a couple of seconds quicker than the time set a little while ago by Pipo Durrani.
Performance Tech, I'm hearing from Shay, is an ongoing electrical issue that they're trying to chase down. So she can talk to me off air, but not on air. That's good. Hate those electrical issues, don't you? It's just awful. Oh
yeah, that's what preventing her from talking to us, isn't it?
Sure enough. 147.546, the top time set by Earl Bamba for the 0-2 Cadillac. How does that compare, Jeremy, to speeds we've seen here in the past?
Yeah, last year's pole position qualifying lap record set by Pipo Durrani, 145.3. So still a couple of seconds away from that. And with temperatures creeping up again this afternoon, I think that lap record might be safe this afternoon. But we shall see. Count out these guys. So certainly the level of competition at the front in DPI is absolutely magnificent.
Hello to Robert Bester at RSL underscore... at IMSA Radio. Run two accounts this weekend. Good to know that you're listening. Not sure where you are this weekend, Robert, but nice to have you listening in at IMSA Radio if you'd like to be in touch with us. And if you're around the area, our local radio coverage has been increased markedly down through the years. And once again, partnering up with Highlands Radio Group. So for the WEC tomorrow, 7.30 and 10.50 a.m., 95.3 and 106.3 FM, which is News Talk. And for IMSA, highlighting on WWOJ, Highlands Best Country, 99.1 FM. And again on News Talk, 7.30 a.m. and 95.3. So that is a wide variety of local radios, and will be on 206 as well on Sirius XM for IMSA on Saturday. Jeremy's pulling up times from the WEC, and he's going to tell me just how we compare. Yeah. Eventually, we're going to be talking, hopefully, about the LMHs and the new DPI 2.0s, the LMDH, and you and I were at a technical briefing last night, Jeremy, which was very useful about that. But how do the current versions of the cars match up?
Yeah, the fastest time yesterday by the quickest hypercar was 149.7. That's about, well, actually 0.3 slower than the best LMP2 time for WeatherTech at the moment. So, they just had a couple of practice sessions yesterday for WEC. But yeah, I mean, it's not really relevant. They're running different specifications of car, of course, but still interesting, isn't it, to see the differences between the different categories.
And the current DPI, which, you know, the DPI concept is DPI 2.0, becomes LMDH, 147.5. That's quite a difference.
Yeah, the second session yesterday, 150.5 was the fastest time in hypercar.
And what's interesting to me for that, and this is why I never want to be part of a technical commission who has to do the BOP, let's remind ourselves that whilst they're all running on Michelin tyres, the DPIs here are running on customer tyres, whereas the hypercars in the WEC are running on confidential Michelins, which are built specifically for them. So there is going to have to be a balancing of some degree, particularly when the LMDHs go to Le Mans in 2023.
Yeah, really, yikes. That's quite a 3 seconds, that's a chunk. That is a chunk. And that was from yesterday afternoon. The second session was a 50.5, 49.7, I say, was the first session yesterday. For the WEC.
And by the way, we're seeing this not in a one's better than the other way. It's an interesting comparison, exactly. And making the point of how difficult it is for Thierry Bouvet, for Simon Hodgson at the ACO and at IMSA and their equivalent technical teams to be able to balance in terms of not just the lap speed, but how the cars make their lap speed, because that doesn't tell all the story either. The numbers on the stopwatch, but you're talking about cars from completely different philosophies. Spinner at turn number 10, and see if we can see who that was. It was an LMP2 car, and it hasn't come back onto the track.
There it goes.
So let's see who rejoins on the tracker.
He sets a slow middle sector. Was that the car there?
Was that the 47 Motorsport? Or was it an LMP3 rather than an LMP2? Very difficult to pick that one out because it disappeared stage left, camera left. Local yellow taken away now, straight away. And in fact, it was on and off so quickly that it didn't even warrant a mention from race control.
I'm not sure who it was. Like the symmetry at the moment, we've got the 7 DPI cars ahead of the 8 LMP2 cars, and then all the LMP3s, all nice little rows there. John, you'll like that, looking at the timing screen at the moment.
I like that. Yeah. I like that a lot.
Grey, then blue, then orange, and then the GTD cars. They're all the greens, which is regular GTD, and the reds, which are GTD Pro, showing on the Alcamel timing scoring system. They're all jumbled up quite nicely, but of course, yeah, they all run the same specifications. No more GTLM this season, of course, for those of you new to this year in the IMSA WearTech Sports Car Championship. GTLM has been superseded now by a GTD Pro category, and GTD Pro and GTD running exactly the same specifications of cars, all sorts of different cars are in amongst them, and that's what makes this category so good. But there's some GTD is Pro-Am, GTD Pro is, as it says on the tin, Pro. So there'll be some of the drivers who are on the pace of the pros in GTD regular, and some will be just a little bit slower than those as well. But it's certainly going to be two very, very tightly contested classes, as they were at Daytona as well. Spinnet was car number 52, is shown as having spun at turn 13 and continued.
Okay.
So shown at the wheel of that car is Ben Keating. Yikes. Don't often see Ben turning around. Yeah, it's Ben then who spun the number 52 car. The car was on the pole position, as ever it seems, at Daytona once again this year for Ben Keating.
So that was a bit further round than the one we saw, because we were looking to turn, I reckon that was turn 10 that we were looking
it
at.
It was, wasn't it? You're right.
Yeah, so yeah. Not sure who that was. So they get away with one. If nobody else saw it. At IMSA Radio, if you know better. So, Performance Tech just tweeting now, actually. Electric Gremlin has lived in the 38 for quite a few seasons now. Yes. Open to suggestions of how to exorcise it.
Yeah.
Hello, Robert Bester, who we mentioned earlier on. South Lincolnshire in the UK is where he's in from. Hope you're having decent weather. Can't imagine it's quite as nice and warm as it is here, Robert, but thank you for spending some of your Thursday with us.
Thursday, isn't it? Yikes.
And happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody.
Yes.
It is quarter to three in the UK, quarter to four in Europe on a Thursday. Our BMW X4M competition knew it was St. Patrick's Day today because it turned the interior lighting scheme to green. Believe it or not, when we came in this morning, it was. It's been orange all week. It's gone to green today. So, top of the morning to everybody.
New fastest time, Sebastian Bourdais.
Oh, hello.
Race winner from last year when he was driving for the JDC Miller Motorsports team. He's now driving for the Cadillac Racing Chip Ganassi team. Car number 01 then fastest now at 147.110. The sister car for Earl Bamber remains second. That was the time that was set just after we went back to green after that brief red flag period caused by number 38 car coming to a halt out on the racetrack. Earl Bamber in car number 02, 147.5. Third fastest is the time that was set much earlier in the session by Pupa Durrani in car number 31. Then Richard Westbrook is now driving the number 5 car, currently in fourth position. It was Tristan Vautier that set that fast time. And great to see Richard Westbrook back in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship for a full season in that number 5 car this year. He had a great job at Daytona on his return, full-time return to the series.
Still 55 minutes of this session to go. First opportunity for the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship teams and drivers to get cracking and get some laps around Sebring. And, excitement and trepidation, I think, in equal measure for this great old circuit. Respect the bumps. Just looking at the LMP3s, George Kurtz at the wheel of the Core Autosport number 54 from Felipe Fraga for Riley. Indeed. Now in the 74. Hugo de Wilde for Mühlner Motorsport.
De Wilde,
yes, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Hugo de Wilde then in the third place number 6 car.
Yeah, it was Colin Brown who set the fastest time in that number 54 car. Handed over it now to George Kurtz. John Bennett, of course, the regular co-driver there in that Core Autosport entry. And that team has had a fair amount of success here in the past at Sebring. They've won the race 3 times in 2012, 2014, 2016. John Bennett and Colin Brown. And it's a track they love coming to, a track that everybody enjoys coming to. I think it's so different to Daytona, completely different challenge, John.
Yeah, and some would say 12 hours here is worth 24 hours most other places. Yeah. Just in terms of the machinery, I think they're probably right. Doesn't seem like yesterday, but it's probably a decade. All of the European teams used to come here for the opportunity to shake their cars to bits, which I always found interesting.
Yeah, if it could last around here, it was pretty much good for any other track they're going to go to. That's
correct. Yeah.
For reliability testing, there is nowhere better than.
You might not learn much about your setup for, you know, coming here to do a bit of pre-season testing before you start a European season at Silverstone or Spa. You're probably not going to take the suspension settings back to that track, but you're going to know that everything that stays affixed is going to easily stay affixed for 6 hours or 24 hours at Le Mans, 6 hours at one of the early races or 24 hours at Le Mans.
52 minutes remaining in this first practice session of the week for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. An hour and a half, 90 minutes this session in total, 52 to go into turn 3. Car 57 has brought out a red flag, so that is the car that is fastest in GTD. Russell Ward at the wheel of that car at the moment, gone off at turn 3. Apparently we can't see anything on our camera there, but the safety team is being dispatched there to get find out what has happened to that number 57 car. Incident at turn 3. So the red flag is out. The cars will be making their way back to the pit lane.
Second red flag of the session. And there's no point in taking any chances with cars and marshals over the wall in a practice session. I have no
It looks like he's off the road there in turn three,
he's
I think.
He's gone in pretty hard, hasn't he?
Possibly. He's out of frame in that stationary camera at that turn three at the moment, but the safety team there and the medical team are off the track as well in a way that suggests that the Mercedes is perhaps in the tyre barrier there. Been updated, say, car 57 off course in turn three.
Okay.
And we've seen all of the cars, all 53 cars except for one, have turned a lap time of some sort. It looks like the number 99 hardpoint Porsche is still 3 seconds off everybody else. I don't think that's really turned a representative time yet. And the number 93, which is making its debut this weekend, that's a GTD Pro car for Racers Edge Motorsports in conjunction with Wayne Taylor Racing. Number 93 Acura, Ashton Harrison, Kyle Marcelli and Tom Long sharing that car. Ashton making her debut in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. She's been competing in the IMSA Lamborghini Super Trofeo for the last several years and has had some success there. Stepping up now into a GT3 car for the first time. That car's shown us completing three laps, but not a timed lap yet for that car. So clearly they've had some difficulties there. They've been here, they've done some testing. Ashton's had a fair amount of time in the car, so getting herself up to speed, but not yet turning a full lap in this session.
Silence again from the circuit as the cars come back into the pit lane. And we wait for news of the number 57 Wynwood Racing Mercedes AMG GT3.
Yeah. Wayward, apparently, at the moment, unfortunately.
Yeah, Wayward Wynwood, yes. Yeah. From Alten Dienst in Germany, their European base, and spreading their wings there. Christian Hornadel pulling the levers out there for them.
Talking of Dienst, Marvin Dienst is actually going to be the third driver this weekend, alongside Russell Ward and Phil Ellis. And Marvin, 24 years of age. He was, like many drivers, started out in open wheel. He won in 2012 the Formula BMW Talent Cup, which is the old Formula BMW cars. He ran then in the ADAC F4. I think he might have won that championship in 2015, but since 16 he's concentrated on GTD cars. Had some success in the ADAC GT championship and now got an opportunity to come over to race in North America for the first time. That's Marvin Dienst in that number 57 car, which hopefully of the car.
It was rollback, track services and then the big forklift.
Yeah, to reset the tyres.
The tyres seem to have done their job. There's some advertising that will need to be replaced there. The TechMet sponsored Mercedes AMG GT3. Let's have a look at the front of that car. The wheels are turning. Actually, not too much damage at all visually. But what's happened underneath and why couldn't Russell reverse it out of there? Just looking
Does he not want to risk causing any additional damage?
Well,
perhaps.
Fair point.
You're going on to the low loader, though, as you suggest. It's not getting a tow back.
I wonder if there's... I'm wondering if there's some right-hand front steering damage because the right-hand wheel isn't pointing... it's moved. We've got one of the...
It's a bit jaunty, does it?
We've got somebody actually working the steering. The flatbed, the low loader, sticking out onto the track, so absolutely had to be a red flag for the recovery of this car. The clock will continue to run as the big yellow forklift heads to reposition the banded tyres. I think Jordy Mitchell wouldn't have had as big a hit with a song called Big Yellow Forklift. Although, you know, there might be a market for it. Fairly easy recovery for the track services. They've done, as ever, their very best to make sure that no damage was caused to that number 57 Wynwood Racing machine. Put the planks out to make sure that the approach angle for the cart was as shallow as possible. And now the replacement of the tyres, or the repositioning of the tyres. Four rows of tyre stacks in front of the concrete wall at Christensen Corner.
Yeah.
Turn three. Not much runoff there, Jeremy, and the grass actually, despite the fact it's nice and sunny here now, the grass is still a little bit damp from the rain earlier in the week and the overnight fog and dew this morning.
Yeah, and you're carrying a fair bit of speed, certainly into turn three there when you get on the brakes, and you know, whether he locked them up or whatever happened, we didn't see what caused the incident, but he went... you know, pretty acute angle off the racetrack there and into the tyre barrier. So whether he, I wouldn't have thought he actually got the apex at all. So I think he maybe had some sort of braking difficulty going in there and made some pretty stout contact with the front, and particularly the right front on that car.
Yeah, a bit of bodywork damage. Difficult to see whether the front suspension with the car on the back of the truck, it's heading back towards shit.
It could be there was some contact with another car.
All you need there.
Yeah.
All you need there.
He was stuck on the outside there, perhaps somebody diving down the inside. I mean, there's all sorts of potential causes for the car running off there into the tyre barrier on the exit of the corner.
There are a couple of what our Australian colleagues, hello Krailsy and the rest of the team, we call witness marks, but I'm pushed to describe which one was which. One is a spin, so I don't think that was it, and the other one didn't really go at the scene of the accident we've just seen. Yeah. So I don't think they played a part there, but as Jeremy said, he's not really got around the corner there.
Yeah, I think most likely would be some contact with another
side
car
by side.
Somebody diving down the inside into that corner, and Russell kind of stuck on the outside, and perhaps a bit of context, you're saying, just ushering him off to the right-hand side of the racetrack on that left-handed corner. But they're probably doing, what, 60, 70 miles an hour through that corner, having been probably doing 135 or so coming into it.
Once you get on the throttle out of turn one, you flat through that little kink with back to green straight away as soon as the car was back in the pit lane. Yeah, very good.
43 minutes remaining.
And as if by magic, we hear car noise again. So how long was that, Jeremy, from the red flag?
About 10 minutes, I think.
Let's have a wee scroll down.
Better part of 10 minutes, yeah.
It might have been a bit longer than that, actually.
Yeah.
Green flag track clear. Red flag at 50. Pretty much.
Right.
And green flag. So you were right. Yeah. Only 8 minutes, that. That's wow. That's, you know, 8-9 minutes. That's pretty good effort from track services and everybody to get that done. And there's no way you could have done it under a little yellow. So let's just make that point again. We had to have the recovery truck partially on the track there. So race control calling the red flag early, getting the appropriate bits and pieces out there. So now, what are we going to see now? Are we going to see these guys continue to work on a race setup? Are we going to see them do a little qualifying simulation? What time is qualifying?
That's a good question.
That normally tells us, doesn't it? We'll be trying to do it at the right time of the day.
Qualifying tomorrow is at
about now.
Well, a bit earlier than now,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
Starts at,
it's before the WEC race, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Qualifying starts for GTD tomorrow at 9:20.
Oh, right.
And the DPI cars are out. The qualifying will be split into different sessions. We'll have all the GTD as pro and non-pro out first for 15 minutes. Then a brief 10-minute gap before the LMP3 cars go out together, and then another also for 15 minutes and a 10-minute gap before the LMP2s and DPIs go out for the final session. So it'll be three different groups. Then for qualifying, it'll be over by 10:25. What time it's now is 11 o'clock. So expect perhaps similar conditions tomorrow, certainly. But and most of the teams have been here and done some testing to prepare here. But you know, with all sorts of other cars having been on track since they were last out, the weather's always going to be slightly different this time of year in any case. So I think most of the teams are just working and getting each of the drivers in. During that red flag interruption, many of the teams have opted to change drivers and send out a second or maybe third driver in each of those cars, in many of the cars, for this restarted part of the session. Up at the front, it's still Sebastian Bourdais, who'd got jumped to the top in that car number 01. He's fastest, but in the 02 car, it was Will Bamber that set the time that puts it second quickest, about 0.4 away from the time set by Sebastian Bourdais. It's now Neil Jarny who's taking the wheel number 02 car. Kevin Magnussen was set to drive that car here. He will be concentrating for most of the season, with the original plan for him to be concentrating on the new hypercar for Peugeot, which is not here this weekend. So that freed him up to continue to drive for the Chip Ganassi Cadillac Racing entry that he raced last year. But with the various machinations going on in around the world, it meant that there was an opportunity at the Haas F1 team. That's the team that Kevin Magnussen drove for previously before coming over to IMSA last season. And they called him up and said, you know, they'd like him to drive for them this season in Formula One. So Kevin Magnussen, instead driving at Bahrain in the open race of the season this weekend, opened the door up. And Neil Jarny was confirmed on Monday, I think it was, to be stepping into his shoes in the car number 02. So Neil Jarny making his return to the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. Former pole winner here at Sebring back in 2017, I think it was. For the Swiss driver, really likable guy, just a great guy. He has had a best finish of second here in the past as well.
Delighted to say that we have re-established communications with our outpost in the pits. Adam, hello, welcome back to the broadcast.
Hello, I've been here the whole time out on the pit lane. I've actually walked all the way down to pit in at this point in proceedings, and it's been very busy down here. A lot of procedure being run through by everybody, and very few driver changes actually going on. I think people are trying to keep their second and third drivers fresh, but now I'm starting to see second drivers up on the wall. We'll be able to grab a word from Jeff Westfall here shortly, hopefully, because he's expecting to get out of the 39 Carbon at Lamborghini, handing over to Corey Lewis, so that'll be a nice change, but I'm going to keep stalking him, John, so we can knock out some interviews.
You mentioned you were going to give us some news on the 48 Ally Cadillac.
Just
as I went, we mentioned that. If you fall off the air again after I've mentioned the 48 car, we'll know that it's something that they don't want to spread to the world. What information were you going to impart?
I was going to say, and it's actually Toyota relevant, so maybe it's Toyota that's trying to keep us from spreading this news. The seven drivers, the three drivers, so the number seven Toyota in the WEC, two of the three are driving in the Ally Cadillac this weekend. The other one is Mike Conway in the 31 Whelen Engineering car. Toyota has agreed to let their drivers participate in both races this weekend, but they have not agreed to let their drivers participate in practice, which means that Kamui Kobayashi and Jose Maria Lopez will get into that 48 Ally Racing Cadillac for the first time Saturday morning during the 20-minute warm-up session, meaning that if we want to hear from a driver in the 48, well, we're not going to be able to, because Mike Rockenfeller is the only name that you will see against that car for the entirety of the practice session today and qualifying tomorrow.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. Suppose that it's a world championship and they've got first
dibs.
Absolutely.
I completely agree. I understand on that one. That's very understandable, but it seems odd. Having said that, the original plan, of course, was for Jimmy Johnson to do this race.
Yes, good point.
And that would have been no problem. But then, with the addition to the NTT IndyCar Series schedule of the second round of the season at Texas this weekend, that took Jimmy out of the equation. So that means they have to fall back to plan
D.
Yeah, exactly.
F.
Yeah, whichever one it was. And so Rocky's going to be a busy boy. He'll be enjoying that, of course. But it's going to make it difficult for the other two just hopping into this car, which is going to be quite different to the hypercar Toyota that they're going to be driving in the WEC for the balance of this week until Saturday. It'll be very difficult for them to jump into this car for the first time and get ready for a 12-hour race. That's kind of bizarre, I think.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of sore people after the after the 8 hours on Friday.
Ryan Hunter-Reay now shown at the wheel of car number 01. So he's another substitute driver effectively in that car for this weekend. Great to see Ryan back in action. Unfortunately losing his opportunity to drive with the Andretti team in IndyCar over the winter. And he wasn't available, he wasn't part of this team in the opening race of the season. Of course, it was Renger van der Zender and Sebastian Bourdais who are going to be the regular drivers in that number 01 car. And they were joined at Daytona by Scott Dixon and Alex Palou, who made his sports car debut massively impressively with a new lap record during the race. But again, it would have been Scott Dixon who was the third driver in that 01 car this weekend until the IndyCar schedule was moved. And of course, that's his primary focus. Same for Alex Palou. So that gave the team an opportunity to bring in Ryan Hunter-Reay, who's got lots of experience here, of course, in the past. And he is going to be taking his first turn of the season, officially at least, at the wheel at number 01 car right now.
As promised, Jeff Westfall fresh out of the Carbon Lamborghini. It's got to be a nice feeling to drive a Lamborghini at Sebring International Raceway, given the great track record that they have here. How comfortable is this car over the bumps?
Yeah, you know, the Carbon with Peregrine Racing number 39 Lambo is pretty good over the bumps out of the box. We're working on that a little bit. There's still room for improvement, I think. But, you know, having said that, for a starting setup and a package, I'm relatively happy with it. Lamborghinis have always been quick here. I've raced against them in the past, so I'm excited to be in one this year. It's going to be quite warm this weekend, so I think it'll be very tropical inside of our cars. We'll just do the best we can.
Does that mean you get the little fruity drinks if it's going to be tropical?
Unfortunately, no umbrella drinks, although that sounds amazing.
So you've won here in an Audi GT4 with this same team around Sebring. How similar are those two platforms that you can translate anything that you've learned in the Audi and Michelin Pilot Challenge?
Yeah, you can definitely tell that the cars are related, the R8 and the Lamborghini. They kind of were born together in the beginning, and they've since diverged a little bit. But the general technique of keeping the pitch control in the car, not putting the nose down too far at turn-in, is very similar between both. So I think that style of driving will suit the Lamborghini.
Tyler McQuarrie, your teammate in the year that you won the championship in GS, he's still driving for the team. He is driving in the Pilot Challenge. How much is he sitting on the pit box cheering you guys on when you're out here for the WeatherTech sessions?
He's one of our biggest cheerleaders. He's been with the team since the inception. Just a solid dude, very great driver, great teammate. I mean, he kind of checks all the boxes as far as someone you'd want to have in your program. So I'm glad he's still running the GT4 car, the new Porsche this year. He's having a blast. It looks like the team's getting along pretty well. So, yeah, great to have Tyler with us.
Thanks for the chat, Jeff.
Thank you.
That was very nice of him, by the way. He came and talked to us before he even went up to see Steve Dinan, so he might be getting a little tisk-tisk for talking to us.
He knew we'd been off the air for a while, and we've only got 32 minutes remaining, so now you have to belt up and down the pit lane and get as many as you can. Thank you, Shane. Thank you for your patience. And thanks to Craig and the guys on the technical side for making sure that we got the wires talking to each other again. Those electrons are flowing. Again, I feel it in my bones. It's much better when things... Can't believe that even the TV remote was conspiring against me. And I bet if I push this now, it works perfectly. There you go. You see? Craig just has to come in and his aura is enough. Is enough, yeah. Still that 147.1, the best for the Cadillac number 01 in LMP2. It is the Colin Browntown 156 9.
Louis Delatraz.
Louis Delatraz, was it? Yeah. Ah.
Colin Brown in LMP3.
Excuse me, yes. 149.4. I skipped that. For the Tower Motorsport, number 8 car. And how we're doing in GTD Pro. BMW fastest.
Yeah.
Number 24.
Yeah, no change there. Then
2:05.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a decent time.
Yeah, the pole last year was a 159.2, but yeah, 2:05 is good. I mean, the race lap record is a 2:08. That was set by Patrick Long last season. So already quicker than that this time around are both of the top two in GTD Pro. Nick Yellerly in the number 24 BMW Team RLL BMW M4 GT3, and also David... Well, it wasn't David Origon, he's driving the car right now, but it was Daniel Serra, the Brazilian, who set the second fastest time, over 2:683, in number 62 Rizzi Competizione Ferrari. Great to see that team back again. They had a great run at Daytona, finished up in second place. They split the Porsches due to the incident on that last lap, well, no, last lap that was, at Daytona in GTD Pro. But as a result of that...
Not
Giuseppe
if you were
Rizzi,
a Porsche at Weissach, apparently. They were a bit worried, or at Flak, should
I say.
They
were worried, yeah. At least they still came away with a win, thankfully.
A win in a third, and not a win in a second, but there was hearts in mouths at some stage.
Indeed so, but a great run by Rizzi, and Giuseppe has brought that car here again this weekend, and hopefully for another strong run. Certainly second place at the moment for the Ferrari. So it's BMW, Ferrari, Mercedes, and then Porsche, and then Lexus... in the GTD Pro category. There's various other GTD regulars in there as well. Five different cars in the top five in GTD Pro right now. In GTD, it's Mercedes, BMW, Porsche, Ferrari, and then Acura with the number 66 car, seventh position in the class right now. It's Mario Farnbacher, who set the time in number 66. Russell Ward, it was a time actually set by Phil Ellis early in the session. That remains fastest in GTD, but number 57 car for Wynwood Racing, currently back in the paddock after an incident for Russell Ward at turn 3. Under half an hour remaining now, 28 minutes and change. No change at the top, it's still... number 01 car fastest. The time set by Sebastian Bourdais. Ryan Hunter-Reay getting himself up to speed. Last time around for Ryan was, he's back in the pits now. I think he just did an outlap, actually, and back in again. So that car is the fastest car at the moment. Second position, the teammate car with Neil Jarny turning his first laps of the day in car number 02.
Let's head back to Shea Adam in the pit lane on the other side of the circuit from us. She's moved to Hartnoff Racing.
With the pro car and Alex Riberas back home, Hartnoff Racing, Sebring, you were just saying you haven't been here since 2019 for a race. This place, though, this is one of your favorite tracks, isn't it?
Yeah, this is right here one of my favorite moments of my entire life right here, sharing the car with Mr. James and Mario Farnbacher in 2015, you know, winning the race on that hectic end of a lap. And just what a magic experience to be here. It's such a unique atmosphere. And especially now with the WEC as well joining us, it just doesn't get much better than this.
It was a big BOP swing for the Aston Martin compared to Daytona, but not compared to last year. So the car that you were racing at the end of last year, it's got to still feel familiar, at least when you come to Sebring, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like now we are back on a range that we feel like we can be competitive, and the car does feel good out there. We have a lot of work to do for sure. But, you know, the field is also extremely competitive, and there's a lot of quick guys out there, so... We're going to have to deliver very, very good and consistent performances from everybody if we want to have a chance to win here on Saturday.
Do you view this as a six-driver team as opposed to two cars in two different classes?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is one family. And, you know, at the Rolex, when we had the unfortunate event of having to retire car number 23, you know, immediately I felt like, well... this is at least a better way to retire if we have a sister car that I'm supporting, that I'm cheering for, that I'm, you know, hoping to see them succeed. And it feels like that. It's not any sort of forced environment. It's everything. It just feels like one big family.
Good luck this weekend, Alex.
Thank you so much.
And John, just to back that up, I saw at one point during red flag, Alex was sitting in the car. Ian James, who is on the sister car, came over and was asking Alex about how the 23 was doing. It really is one family.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point you've made there, Shea. A team with a heck of a lot of social responsibility. The clue's in the name, Heart of Racing, Seattle Children's Hospital. It's a specialist unit for children with cardiac issues, and millions of dollars raised by that team for that very good car cause. And even when part of the team got stuck on the other side of the world when the lockdown first started, they went racing there and raised some money for a local children's hospital with a heart unit, won a national championship down there as well, just, you know, as you do whilst you're hanging out in lockdown. Let's go racing. New Zealand, I think they were, weren't they? That's where they got stranded. I can think of far worse places to be stuck. So what we've got left, Jeremy? 25 minutes and not many changes recently.
No, it's been fairly static on the timing charts. It's still that number 01 car with a 147.1, set probably half an hour or so ago by Sebastian Bourdais. Neil Jarny in second place, the sister car, 01 ahead of the 02. Third position remains number 48 car, Mike Rockefeller. That car's on pit lane at the moment. The Cadillacs filling out the top five positions, also with number 31 car, Pipo Durrani, back at the wheel of that car now. It was he who set the time earlier on. Then Tristan Nunez turned a few laps, I believe, as well. And But it's Durrani back at the wheel of that car now. I don't think Mike Conway... is Mike Conway... He's probably not allowed to drive either.
Correct,
imagine, until Sunday morning. He's also
Saturday
part morning. Of the Toyota Gazoo Racing hypercar entry. So it'd be these two going back and forth. They're going to be the regular season drivers, of course, in that number 31 car this season. Pipo Durrani and Tristan Nunez. Pipo Durrani back at the wheel of that car right now. Richard Westbrook rounding up the top five. Well, the car does. The time was set by Tristan Vautier, but it's Westbrook driving it right now. And no real quick times at the moment at all amongst the DPI ranks. Not going particularly quickly either in LMP2 or LMP3 either, actually.
Just getting a few laps in. This is the first session. It's easy to forget because we've been here all week, as the saying goes. Try the veil, tip the waitress. Easy, as I say, to forget that this is the first session for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, and the entries getting used again to the bumps of the former Hendricks Field. Just good to have a bit of sunshine. Temperature. Yeah. Gently rising into the mid-20s Celsius at the moment. Humidity dropping as the heat of the day comes in. Track temperature and air temperature fairly steady in the mid-20s at the moment. We had track temperature the other day of over 30 degrees Celsius. That's starting to get a bit toasty. But as soon as the sun goes in here, it does cool down. Old tarmac, old concrete doesn't hold that energy for very long. At IMSA Radio, by the way, if you'd like to get in touch with us, nice to have your company. And hello to John DeGeese, who I know is listening in, Sportscar 365. And thank you for your information, JD. Good to see some of our colleagues, some of them we haven't seen for a very long time at that technical briefing last night. So it was much a catch-up with friends from around the world, as it was getting the rundown on the technology for the new LMDH and how that hypercar and LMDH category is going to be balanced both by the ACO and by IMSA. And great thank you to IMSA, the ACO, and the technical partners, Bosch, Williams Advanced Engineering in particular, who gave of their time last night. Pretty nice evening under, if it wasn't a full moon, it must have been pretty close to it, but very pleasant indeed. Good atmosphere to get some information. Short presentation with everybody on the stage and then a bit of a mix and mingle, Jeremy. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I thought it was a nice way to do it. Give us the opportunity to ask questions one-on-one with the assembled experts.
Yeah, me too. It was indeed very informative and very insightful evening. Yeah, great fun all the way around, actually. And it's just wonderful to hear so much positivity on both sides of the equation, from the ACO and from IMSA, and all the manufacturers that are involved in a new LMDH and or hypercar projects, all working together toward a common goal. And that was very much the theme of last night, the connectivity and the cooperation amongst everybody involved, just to make sure they have the right product going into the race. Once the race season starts,
yeah, absolutely, for the good of the sport. Once we get on track,
that's going to be a different thing altogether. But right now, to prepare, to make sure everybody's on the same page going into the new season, it's very, very important. And pretty much everybody, to a person last night, said, they've never experienced that level of working together and inclusively before in this sport. It's a very competitive sport, obviously, but everyone wants to make sure that we do have the best product possible going into the new season.
We'll go down to James Vance with Shane in a moment, but before that, I'm going to tell you we have a new fastest time. Renke van der Zande just checking to make sure that we're still watching the timing screens, and we are. Al Kamel pops up the new time of 1:46.822 to stretch the lead at the front of the field to nearly 0.7 of a second over the MSR Acura in second place. Shea Adam.
Stretching the bounds of technology as well, all the way down at the pit out end of things. James Vance, Fast MD Racing, is back with the LMP3 machine. You guys did Petit Le Mans last year, sat out Daytona, but back again, and back with not one, but two cars over two series. How busy is this team?
We should have said something from the Terminator, like we'll be back or something like that at Petit. I tell you, what an off season it's been. I mean, we really just tried to maximize our resources, maximize our time as much as we could. We came to Sebring and did a bunch of testing. Same lineup as we had at Petit Le Mans. So myself, Max Andretti, and Todd Archer. Everyone's made really, really big gains, and the team's really come together in a good way so far. So we're just going through our processes. We unfortunately, a couple weeks back, had a bit of a wreck here at Sebring. So this is actually our first time back on track since then. So this session's more of just kind of a shakedown, making sure the car's all good. And then next session, we're going to start making what we hope are improvements. And it's a long race, right? So just giving ourselves options and giving ourselves the freedom to make those changes. That's what it's all about.
You mentioned Todd Archer there. He's an inexperienced driver, someone you've been coaching for a little while. Why is LMP3 the perfect class for guys like him?
Well, I think first and foremost, IMSA WeatherTech, IMSA and being the series organizer and IMSA WeatherTech being the series we're competing in, have done an incredible job at making sure that the drivers that show up here do show a lot of respect and are of the understanding that this industry isn't just about the pros and going racing. It's about the amateur and the gentleman guys that are not only looking to live out their dreams, but looking to become the best drivers that they can possibly be and race against the very best. So, for him, he's got a level head. He's an extremely awesome dude, and he's got a ton of ability to drive a car. And it's just a matter of getting to grips with the LMP3, because it is that bit of a hybrid between sports car and full-on prototype. So there are some similarities, but there are some, big differences with the aero package that he's had to get used to. But he's done a mega job so far. He kept it clean at Petit, and he's been doing a mega job in testing all off season. So, we love Todd. We love our Todd.
Can't wait to see you guys sneaking up the charts even further. Keep an eye on the number 40 Fast MD LMP3 machine.
Thank you, Jay.
Little spin for Toyota number 7. And
that would be Wick.
Oh, sorry. You see, that had to happen, didn't it, at some stage? That would have been 47 Motorsports Duquesne in LMP3. So Anthony Mantella at the wheel of that one, Jeremy.
Yeah, Canadian driver making his first start in the category. He's going to be doing the full season race. He did not race at Daytona in the Rolex 24, but he did race at Daytona the previous week in the first round of the IMSA Prototype Challenge Series. I think he's going to be doing that series as well this season. So great to see Anthony Mantella back again. He's raced in IMSA before. He's raced in the Michelin Pilot Challenge and had some success in all sorts of different cars over the years. And great to see Anthony driving that car, that number 7 car, as you say, for 47 Motorsports, alongside Mark Kouame and Trenton Estep, who drove the car at Daytona. Both Kouame and Estep also racing, of course, today in the Porsche Carrera Cup North America presented by the Cayman Islands. So they got a busy day yesterday, with 6 different practice sessions yesterday, plus including qualifying. And then today they're racing 2 Porsche races and the Michelin Pilot Challenge race later on today. And then, of course, the WeatherTech race on Saturday. So a very busy weekend for Kouame and for Trenton Estep.
Last 15 minutes, live from Sebring, trackside on the outside of Turn 17. The Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre, Jeremy Shaw, John Hindhoff and Shea Adam in the pit lane. So Renger van der Zande down with 46.8. 49.4, still the best time for Tower Motorsports. That car with John Ferrano at the wheels just left the pit lane in LMP3. Core Autosport has the best time, 156.9, and John Bennett's taken that car out. He's been out for a few laps now. GTD Pro, BMW Team RLL, the number 24 car with a 2:05, and in the AM category, it is still the time of Russell Ward in just GTD, I should say. That car last seen going into the pit lane in the wrong direction, but it was all right because it was on the flat of a flatbed. Good job, I don't talk for a living. And Russell Ward, fine, he got out the car all right. Little bit of contact with the tyres at turn 3. Shea Adam might be able to give us a bit of an update on the Winwards at number 57. Still got the fastest time, Shea.
Yeah, and for Russell, it's actually a bit reminiscent of qualifying a few years ago in the Michelin Pilot Challenge when he went out and set the fastest time and promptly went off in turn 1. So not very good memories for him. But I actually walked all the way down to the pit box. All the crew was already gone by that point. I talked with Blair, the pit official, who said that the team actually expected Russell to drive the car back. They had assumed that the damage was that light. So I'm actually heading back down that way again to see if there's anybody anywhere near their box once again. But the last time I was there, it was crickets.
And what was the score on the cricket? Have England lost any more wickets?
I can make up some numbers for you, because that's what you normally numbers. Do for me.
It's just numbers for you, isn't it? Thank you very much. Second test in Barbados, England versus West Indies. England batting very slowly yesterday, or scoring very slowly yesterday. At IMSA Radio, if you want to get in touch with us, big day today with the Michelin Pilot Challenge race coming a bit later on this afternoon. We've got night practice as well, always one of my favourite sessions. And we've got the final practice session, FP3, and qualifying for the FIA World Endurance Championship, their first round of 2022. Their 10th season of FIA WEC. It seems only minutes ago that we were packing our bags and our equipment to get on flights to go and cover the ILMC, the precursor to the FIA World Endurance Championships. Sao Paulo, Fuji, great, loved it. Really good to see those cars back. I really enjoyed having a wander around. Jeremy had a ball on Tuesday, having a wander around the paddocks, and again a little bit yesterday. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, around the WEC paddocks. I thoroughly enjoyed myself, just pottering around there, having a chat to people. Just so nice, Jeremy, to be able to see people. We've been very well looked after by all of the PRs and all of the information flow from the teams when we haven't always been able to be talking directly. But it's nothing quite like wandering around and the smell of the crowd and the roar of the grease paint kind of thing. It does make a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, it does make a huge difference. You're absolutely right. And of course, you know, having not been to a racetrack in 2 years, there's a lot of new people around as well, so it's been great to meet them for me over the last couple of days. We're your second fastest time now. We've got one of the Acuras in amongst that phalanx of Cadillacs, Oliver Jarvis it is, in kind of 60 for Myershank Racing. Second fastest at 147.5. Again, the fastest time was set by Renger van der Zander just a little while ago, 146.7 for number 01 Cadillac.
All right, Ryan Dial, the last time the WEC ran at Sebring for the opening round of their championship was 2012. LMP2 car, you won that race and went on to win a championship. Well, LMP2 championship starts at Sebring because Daytona doesn't count for points. So might that be a portent of what's going to come for this year?
Sounds good on paper, right? I didn't realize it was that long since they ran here. No, it's a cool event, right? It's cool when we just do it with IMSA, but it's nice to see the WEC cars here. And, you know, doing the track walk last night, it was just nice to see a full crowd again. Sebring's not the same without the Turn 10 and Turn 9 guys, so we obviously didn't finish Daytona the way we wanted to. But we came close to winning this one last year, so we feel stronger this year, and we'll see what we get.
You've driven so many different iterations of car in the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring over the last, well, decade at least, from the open cockpit LMP2. You've driven the DPI. How does this LMP2 that you're in now compare?
I mean, the cars now are so good. I mean, I will say, looking at the temperature this weekend, I wish we were back in the open top cars. It was nice to have a little air conditioning in your face. And also, like, that year, that generation was a very cool car, like the 2012 Honda. Still to this day, probably is one of the best cars I drove. But I would say that the Auric is pretty close second to that. So I wish we could get turned back up again and go race for the overall. But I guess I'll test to it in the manufacturer, so we'll be slowed down.
How are the driver comforts in the Orica?
The comforts? There's no such thing as comfort right here. You know, even we tested a couple weeks ago, I can't believe how beat up I got. So, you know, even when you do your first couple laps a day, it's always, you know, you're like, it's like somebody's playing an accordion on you. Daytona, I always feel like, you know, you leave there and you're 2 inches shorter, and then you come here and you're beat up in every possible position. So we try and spend a lot of time making sure we have as many comforts in the car as we can. But at the end of the day, it's Sebring, and it wouldn't be the same if we smoothed out.
You're a good person to ask this question to. The 20 drivers who are doing double duty this weekend, are they mental?
No, I mean, I'm happiest when I'm driving, right? And if I'd had the opportunity to do double or triple duty this weekend, I'd have done two. But I'm glad I'm getting too old for that. But plenty of years that I've done both, and it's a lot of fun. And I always found it challenging on weekends where I jump from a prototype to a GT car. I think that's really tough. It's always, for me, harder to go with the slower car than it is to go back into the faster car, just because of the confidence level and the high downforce. But I hope some of the guys in P2, by the time they're done on Friday night, are knackered, and it gives us an advantage. So, fingers crossed.
But how about for you? I mean, you're driving the car today. You're not going to get in it tomorrow because it's qualifying. And then you're going to be back in it Saturday. Is it worse to have to wait the day?
I might drive home tomorrow night, and driving from here back to Orlando is as bad as it gets for traffic management. So if I don't drive tomorrow, at least I get to get some traffic help.
That's fair, Brian. Thank you, and good luck to the whole Era Motorsport team.
Thank you.
Very good. Great to hear his voice back on IMSA Radio's airwaves as well. And Ryan Dial enjoying, I think safe to say, enjoying his time here at Sebring International Raceway. 319-3, by the way, in the test match at the moment. Stokes has got his 50. Joe Root, the captain, not out 140. Dan Lawrence was out the last ball of yesterday for a very good 91. Shea's just thinking I'm making that up now, of course. Just numbers.
Just look at the timing scoring here, John. That number, we talked about number 93 car making its debut this weekend in the GTD Pro category. That's the Acura that's going to be run by the Racers Edge Motorsports, John Marachi's group, alongside with in conjunction with Wayne Taylor Racing. That car, talked about a while ago, it completed three laps of the circuit but no flying laps. It's now done five, shown as having been around the track five times, so again no flying laps, so it must be some sort of a problem obviously on that number 93 Acura. That's a shame for that team, no represented laps at all. I think the minimum number of laps being completed by any cars are 13. Well, 15 for the number 57 Mercedes. That's the car that was off the road, crashed at turn three. Also, Mauro Engel, number 97 Mercedes, which is currently third in GTD Pro. That car's only completed 13 laps as well. Number 15 laps also for number 38 of Performance Tech. That had a problem earlier on in the session, but Rasmus Lind was able to get back out again and has actually moved himself up to second place in LMP3 in that number 38 car. Rasmus Lind, the Swede, in a Ligier. So second in LMP3, just about a tenth of a second behind the class leading time. That was number 54 Court Order Sport entry set by Colin Brown.
Down the last 5 minutes then. And other, well, we had a couple of red flags, didn't we? The major one for the Winward car, which still has the fastest GTD time. We'll get an update on that before the next session. Shea Adam has just walked by their pit stand again, and person there were none. So they're working behind. I suspect that, Jeremy,
there was what's going on with the Acura, and also why the WeatherTech Mercedes has not been seen for the last probably at least 45 minutes, I think.
Shea Adam, could give us an update on one of those two, Shea?
The WeatherTech Mercedes went back to the garage during the first red flag session we had. Cooper McNeil drove it back. He got within a few millimeters of concrete barrier making the turn, but that car disappeared. That pit box has been empty. The 97 side, the Porsche side, that's been fairly occupied, but there have been some, well, not very happy faces on that box for this entire session. I made it down to Windward Racing. There is still no one here at their box, so clearly they're working and not coming back out for this session. And many thanks to Diane Swintall, who always listens to us, John. She said it is a 98% full moon tonight at 6:40 is when it will begin. So you were right, talking about last night, almost full moon.
Anything about the Acura? Do we know anything about the Acura?
Which Acura?
Which one was it, Jeremy, sorry?
93
Acura.
93. They were working on that earlier on. There were a lot of very confused faces underneath that tent. This is their first foray into this sort of racing. But there weren't a lot of answers being given at that point. That was about 20 minutes ago. I did see Ashton Harrison getting ready to get in the car, but not necessarily getting ready to be sent out. So I do not have an answer for that as of now, besides the fact that there were a lot of Acura people working on it.
Right, okay. Debut for that team, as Shea mentioned. And
yeah, a fair bit of success for that team with that car in SRO.
Yep.
Last season, but John Marachi and that Racers Edge group making its return to IMSA, been out of IMSA for quite a few years, and he's certainly enjoying the opportunity to get back here. But as he said, there's lots to learn for his team in terms of the procedures and the strategies, and that's why they're going to be relying quite a bit this weekend on the tie-up with Wayne Taylor Racing, particularly in terms of strategies when it comes down to the 12-hour race on Saturday.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday racing. That's got to be the future, isn't it? You got the Sunday off to do things with the family. Another Porsche race today, then the Alan J Automotive Network 120 for the Michelin Pilot Challenge. Got FP3 in qualifying for World Endurance Championship, their race tomorrow. Qualifying for WeatherTech tomorrow, live in sound and vision, wherever you are in the US or further afield. And then on Saturday, the big race live for you. And if you're outside the US and you don't have a network TV deal, it's all live free. No breaks through that here in the US. Lee Diffie in the team.
I don't think it is. No, Lee's at...
Lee's will be in Texas,
Lee's
is he?
Lee will be in Texas, yeah.
Of course
I think
it is.
I think it's Dave Burns, actually.
Dave Burns, all right.
A drive-through penalty for car number 8. That's the fastest car in LMP2. The Tower Motorsport Orica, John Ferrano, has been assessed a drive-through penalty for a pass under yellow. So he's going to have to make a quick pit stop. And with only less than a minute remaining in this session, he's not going to be able to resume, I think, after that drive-through. A couple of improvements, no really significant. LMP2, Mikkel Jensen up to fourth position in the car number 52 for PR1 Matheson Motorsports. 150.4. Fastest time was 149.4. was set way earlier on by Louis Delatraz, the Swiss driver, in a number 8 car. In LMP3, it's an improvement there for Lance Wilsey.
Ah, good
perhaps
for him.
He goes fifth fastest. It's a good effort. In car number 33 for Shorten Creech Motorsports.
Yeah, they were on social media earlier this week and today. Really looking forward to this as the checkered flag comes out.
A couple of improvements lately in GTD Pro, up to fourth position, the second of the BMW Team RLL entries. That's car number 25. Augusto Farfus has gone fourth fastest. The class led by the sister car of car number 24. It was the Englishman, Nick Yellerly, that set that time. In GTD regular, it's still that Russell Ward time from much, much earlier on. Fastest, second, and third are also BMWs. So BMWs haven't been off the pace at Daytona. Very much on the pace here. We've got of the top seven cars total in GTD, Pro and or Am, four of them are BMW M4 GT3 cars. Second position in GTD Pro is the Ferrari, Ferruccio Competizione, then a couple of Mercedes, then three more BMWs. And the best of the Porsches, which is the fifth fastest in GTD Pro, the FAF Motorsports entry, Matthew Jaminet.
Well, Turner, this seems to be a much better start than when we last left you guys at Daytona. Sebring treating the BMW a lot nicer, isn't it?
Of course, you never want to count any chickens, especially for a long race like Sebring. But I'm happy that our BMW has a little more pace compared to the field. Again, it's first practice session, so we don't know. But we did test here, as did the other BMW. And I don't know if we learned a lot, but we did learn that, you know, the car is very good for the long run, which I think was the part of making this car. So we're happy so far. We'll just see if it has the overall pace and hope that reliability stays our way.
How much of a distraction is it this weekend that you've got race 499 and 500 for Bill Oberlin potentially?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's paid me enough to make sure that we let him in the car for these two races so that the 500th happens at Sebring. So I'm not sure he'll have enough money to put fuel in his boat this summer, but as long as I took some money out of Bill Oberlin's wallet so he could do his 500th at Sebring with Turner Motorsport, that's awesome. So it's really cool to be part of it, and, you know, Bill's going to smile either way as soon as he gets in the car.
Is it any easier from a team owner and manipulator of all the logistics standpoint to have the Michelin Pilot Challenge weekend being so abrupt and over today?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, we woke up this morning and realized it was race day, but and then realized it's not race day again until Saturday. So it's different, but, you know, if you walk through the paddock here, there's so much going on, and it's awesome. It's great for fans, and it's certainly keeping everybody busy.
Where are we going to go for victory tacos tonight? I need a good recommendation.
Well, I can't divulge that info because then we might not get in. So,
very fair point. Good luck today.
Cool. Thank you.
Always good to have Will Turner on the show. Thanks to Shea Adam down in the pit lane and to Jeremy Shaw, who was with me, John Hinoff, in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Free practice one is in the record books then for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship and the 70th running of the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring. Cadillac Racing and the 01 car from Chip Ganassi with Hrenger van der Zander and a 146.7 top of the pile. Best in LMP2, Tower Motorsports, number 8, Orica. In LMP3, Core Autosport with their Ligier, the number 54, 16th overall for them. In GTD Pro, the BMW M Team RLL, the number 24 car. And in GTD, a bit of triumph and disaster for Winward Racing. Best time, but the car ended up quite early on in the wall. But actually about halfway through that session. It was around about 45 minutes, wasn't it? 48 minutes into the session that Russell hit the wall at turn two. The car was recovered. It's back in the pits, back in the paddock, should I say, being worked on. But the 2 minutes, 0.906 was still the best time in GTD. Free practices still to come today, including night practice as well, of course. And we'll have every session of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship for the 70th running of the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring, presented by Advance Auto Parts, here on IMSA Radio throughout the weekend. Bye for now.
This program is a radio show limited production. For more, check imsaradio.com and subscribe to IMSA Radio wherever you get your podcasts.